welcome to the first episode of On Connection. I'm Emma Rose Connolly, and I work for a company called Conversant. We're a global firm based in Boulder, Colorado. We focus on the design of human connection and conversation to improve leadership and organizational performance. While topics around human connection have become more mainstream in the business world in recent years, it's still a largely underutilized asset in most of organizational life. And yet, we know it's a critical leverage point for achieving results. We see organizations as networks of conversation. The conversations that you're in every day in order to plan, execute, ideate, manage, etc. And if you work to improve the quality of those conversations, you improve your quality of connection and therefore performance and results. So we believe that the conversations are the work of leadership, the work of culture change, of strategy, of performance, you name it. Part of having high quality conversations means truly listening to and learning from another. That often means people that are likely to have a different perspective than you do. And while that might sound like a recipe for frustration and inefficiency, we truly believe that people are stronger and smarter together than they are separately, and that difference is valuable, whether that's in our backgrounds, our points of view, or our levels of experience. We have so much that we can learn from the people in our systems, especially about the reality of our work, the reality of the world that we're trying to achieve something in, and the possibilities we never might have thought possible on our own. We may come to understand something that used to live in our blind spots, like all of the unconscious things that we do every day that get in our way, at best, and often do real harm. In the rush of the day-to-day, the bureaucracy, the processes, and the circumstances that separate us, we tend to leave all of that intelligence on the table. On this podcast, we will bring the lens of generational difference. I myself am a millennial, and I will be co-hosting along with my colleagues, Robin Anselmi, our CEO and a member of Gen X, and Mickey Connolly, our founder and chairman and baby boomer. On some episodes, you'll get the three of us talking about a topic related to the world of work and leadership, and for others, we'll host guests and get their perspectives as well. In this first episode, we talk about why it matters to have a multi-generational perspective in the first place, and about this concept of the value of difference. New episodes will be released bi-weekly, and in the coming weeks, you can look forward to conversations, including interviews with various leaders about their experience navigating the back-to-office challenge, which we know is very top of mind for quite a few people. We also have an episode about community, what it means in organizations, and how to build it. We'll talk about joy at work, about what it means to upgrade your conversations, and much, much more. Our hope is that you'll feel a part of these conversations and that you'll find them valuable, whether you're a senior leader of an organization or earlier on in your career. We would love to know what's on your mind for you in the world of work. So please send us questions or topics you'd like us to tackle at marketing@conversant.com. And without further ado, this is the first episode of On Connection. So here we are for our first episode, and I'm joined by Robin Anselmi, who's our CEO, our fearless leader, and Mickey Connolly, who's our founder and chairman. And the reason we're all here today is because we represent three different generations of our company. And I wanted to see if Robin might actually give a little context for the people who don't know us yet that might be listening to us. Who are we? Who's Conversant? What do we do?
Thanks, Emma Rose. It's good to be here with both of you. So for my view of Conversant really goes to the vision that we've established for ourselves. We believe in our bones, in the power and joy of authentic human connection to make a difference, in our organizations, in our strategy, on our results, and frankly, in our lives, and that we all spend way too much damn time at work for it to not be meaningful for all of us. And for too many people in too many organizations, they skate past the depth and breadth of human connection and that there's a design to it. There actually is a design that has people come together and have more productive conversations, have more meaning and more results. And we study that design and help people to learn it and have it reveal new possibilities that they might not have seen. So that's who I think we are in the matter. Mickey, I wonder if you might want to add anything.
All I could say to that is absolutely yes. The only thing that comes to mind is that we say, given that adamant devotion to the power and joy of human connection, that if you really want to work on that, the conversations are the work. Yeah. And so us getting together as citizens of three different generations, standing in one of our basic principles, which is differences plus trust equal brilliance, we just think that this is a good time for us to explore what's the nature of human connection between generations that actually could make us smarter, have us really be wiser because of those differences coming together in a productive way.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't have said it better.
Emma Rose, what for you in our vision, maybe, since that's where we started, is most important for you?
Well, I think it's the part that feels the most risky that we decided to put in there, which is we set a new standard for leadership. And I know we had a lot of back and forth about that as a company, and it makes sense. It is quite a statement to make, quite a claim. We're a fairly small organization. We know a lot of people. We have a pretty broad reach, I think, and we've impacted a lot of organizations over the years, but that's a pretty big statement to make. And at the same time, I think it is high time that there is a different standard for leadership. As a representative of my generation, I think it's actually a demand now. And we're seeing that play out in real time. So I think that we can be stewards of that evolution in leadership. And I hope we live up to it. I think we are.
I love that. And I'm excited about being in this conversation, this idea about really honoring differences and focusing in on what are the differences between the three of us, I think is a fun place to start the conversation today. There's so much that we have in common, and then there's a whole lot of stuff that we've come to this work from different places. We've grown up in different places. We have way different backgrounds. So maybe that's an interesting place for us to launch, is really just to talk about what are some of those unique differences among the three of us and the generations we represent. Nick, you want to begin that?
Well, we clearly have Boomer. I've recently heard this derogatory phrase, okay, Boomer, a lot, which makes it a little more uncomfortable to claim the mantle of Boomer. And then Generation X, Robin, which is you, and Millennial, which is Emma Rose. And I do think we've had very different influential experiences in our life. And, for me, I think we grew up really conscious of World War II, like, because our parents and our grandparents, that was all, it was in the stories and in what they'd been through and what they'd done. I feel like that was a big part of it. I think then getting into in the 60s, the threat of nuclear war with what went on in the Bay of Pigs and the conflicts between Russia and the United States over nuclear assets in Cuba. And then the JFK assassination, the civil rights movement and leading to Martin Luther King's assassination, Watergate, all those things, the Vietnam War, those feel like the milieu that I grew up in that shapes me every day, all the time. So that's one of the things that I think is different, is I grew up in that wake of World War II, in this time of general optimism coming out of it because the economy took off, but then running into all of these breakdowns, assassinations, threats of nuclear war, Vietnam War, just a tumultuous time. And I think what actually came out of that is I started out being dutiful and came through all of those experiences realizing that we had to learn to think for ourselves. We couldn't just follow along.
It's interesting, right? So if we look at the transition from Boomer to Gen X, the Vietnam War, as you, that you mentioned, sort of lingers far back in my memory, right? And mostly comes to me through my dad and his service in the military and the baggage that he personally carried, I think, from his experience there. And the things that didn't get talked about, right? The things that did get talked about and the things that didn't get talked about. Interestingly, my dad was a Vietnam vet and served, was actually overseas. I think I was in my 30s before he ever actually said anything beyond, yes, I served in the military, in any sort of context about Vietnam. And it actually happened, MROs, interestingly, because I think this will come up in your story, right after 9/11 and the impact of, that 9/11 had on him, because he lost so many people that he knew in that. And then he'd also lost so many people during Vietnam. So anyway, it's just interesting, Mick, right? Like, because I think it probably loomed differently in your sort of history and memory than it does in mine, even though there's some sort of overlap in the two. For me, I think the other things that are really that loom large are, so I have an engineering degree, and I was, as a woman in engineering, I was a generation that was okay. Like that was, there were a number of us. It wasn't uncommon any longer, but it wasn't common either. Right. And so it's a very interesting transition point of what did that mean for my early career growth and my early development. What were, and I was an engineer in the South. So there were just some challenges really associated with that at that, in that particular moment of time in my own sort of career growth and development and how it shaped my thinking. People say about me today, I was just with a client who said that they wanted me in a conversation because of my courage. And I think, well, I had to be courageous back then, or holy moly, get just trampled in the conversations of the time. And then the other one, and we were talking about this a little pre-show, was just the real boom of .com and what that did and the way that I think about how work gets done, right? So I am the generation that when I was getting my master's degree, I would start the dial up, go make a sandwich and come back and hope to be connected. So like, it really is sort of a different perspective, around what technology does for us and not assuming that it's always going to be there, I think. Mm-hmm. And Emerose, I'm sure there's a lot of that like, I'm just wondering, is there a transition point between me and you then? Like, are there things that, like I said, that sort of resonate but show up differently in your memory and history?
Well, I mean, yes, I think particularly the role of technology in our ability to connect, the way information was disseminated, my development. Technology was a bigger part of my childhood development, if you think about it. Also, I like that you just named that even though we like to, as human beings, we love to generalize and create buckets and separate people by these defined labels. But, you know, I was influenced by you being my father as a boomer, you being influenced by your father as a boomer. And I also had the privilege of being able to spend a lot of time around people older than me during my 20s, I think, more so than maybe some of my peers. So there's a lot of influence. So even though I might be a millennial, I'm impacted by all these different generations. We're not actually separated. But yeah, technology, huge. I'm just thinking about what we were able to absorb as millennials. Mm. You know, I mean, throughout the different stages of our life, I still was born before there was too much, you know, always on-ness in our culture. I still remember dial-up. It might be hard to believe, but I do. the only thing is I was logging on to like play a game or something in grade school. But you know, through high school is when social media started being a thing. I think Facebook, MySpace was still the dominating thing when I was in school. Instagram really got big when I was in college. So these things that really now define the next generation that's emerging and coming into the workforce, Gen Z below me, those things were just emerging. So we were sort of the guinea pigs for it. And I definitely notice for me that, and the role of our psychology and what we've been discovering about that science, our social psychology, the impact technology and particularly social media, and even the news cycle has had on us. I think we're still sort of in this lab where we're going to see what the long-term impacts are of that. But 9/11 for sure, really just this moment, everybody still remembers, and how that changed how we saw our country, how we saw the world. It's interesting too. As you were saying, all of the different events that impacted you as a boomer, those are all demonstrations of how leadership was modeled to us. If you think about it, government, military, cultural revolutions, and then even how different cultures were able to interact. Were they able to come to an agreement on something? Were we living through an era where difference reigned and there was no grounds for coming together? And I think that impacts what we think about in terms of our capacity to connect and our capacity to overcome difference and what the model of leadership is that we start living into ourselves as we enter those opportunities. Now, I also say all of that as with the preface that I'm a privileged white heterosexual American. So my experiences as a millennial might be very different than somebody else's, but that's what I'll say for mine.
I think that's an important part of this, because even though we do obviously have different environments in which we grew up, we also are unique individuals. And you mentioned it earlier that just the broad stripe of boomer, Gen X, Gen Z, Gen Y, whatever all of the gens, that it's dangerous and can stop us from coming to know each other as individuals. You know, back to this, we believe that differences plus trust equal brilliance. Question I got for the two of you is what are the things that we have a chance to be smarter together about? So what are some of the things going on right now that having this multi-generational thinking resource, you know, where we learn from one another, what are some of the topics that you think that deserves a multi-generational take? Like what?
The simplest one for me, and maybe it comes up because we've been having the conversation internally. Every client I talk to is going through it right now because of this particular moment in time, June of 2021, where everybody's trying to figure out what they're doing with their office space. So there was a big news piece this morning. I think it's Morgan Stanley, has demanded everybody's coming back to the office. The CEO has said, you are coming back to the office, period. And so we see that on one end of the spectrum, and we see, a bunch of the technology companies saying, like, never come back, don't care, don't come back. And I think that is a multi-generational question, because I think the purpose of the office, Mickey, for your generation served one thing, for mine served a slightly different purpose, right? The space itself had a different purpose. And Emma Rose, I think for you, it's a different one. And for the generations to come, it is going to continue to evolve. And so how do we get smart around the, what's the purpose space serves for the way work is done? And I think it'll be an interesting one to debate.
I think that's a really great one. And it's one that I've been uncomfortable in that conversation. Because, you know, we look at the different ways we grew up habituated about how we communicate. Well, my generation, in person was it. Mm-hmm. And then Robin's generation is more email. And now that's that archaic thing. I can't believe those people that do that. And now I get stunned by the younger generations who don't want to talk on the phone. They just want to send messages on it, but to actually answer it, and you know, that seems strange. So my disposition is towards let's be physically together. And I know that. I mean, it's a huge pull for me. And so it's an area that for our company in particular, and for clients that are coming to us saying, how do we be smart about this? And asking us to host the conversations in which they make intelligent choices. I really need other perspectives because I know if it's left up to me, we all are physically together. But I know that that's inappropriate. It's not. So I like what you said about instead of trying to work it out from our generational habits and preferences, work it out from whatever purpose we all care about. And then how can our different generational habits and preferences serve that purpose?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think there's something really basic to name here since we're talking about work and organizational life. Everybody needs to be able to support themselves. No matter your generation, that is a fundamental human. We got to be able to take care of our ability to keep breathing. So we're always going to be pulled in the direction of something to support that. So just to name the purpose of a workforce, you know, even a generation, even leaders in maybe the boomer generation or something, you're not going to avoid that you need the younger generation to be part of your workforce. So if you want your business to keep going, guess what? That's the pool to pick from now. So do you care about what they care about? Do you care about how they're going to show up at work, what they're going to be motivated to contribute, what they might be inspired by, what they might be pissed off about, you know? I just think it's in the best interest of business being sustainable at all to care about coming together and being interested in different perspectives. I also think it's sort of I say this from my perspective, so you guys can correct me if you want, but I think it might be sort of a new thing to care about what younger, less experienced employees think, how they might see a situation differently, especially in big organizations where hierarchy is still really the structure that everybody operates under. It's like, well, pay your dues. You work this many backbreaking hours. You don't have a voice. Go through your to-do list, get it done, and then maybe one day somebody will listen to you. And I think, you know, that still is very true for so many people, even people I know. And so I think there is this advent of now listening. True to form, there's a Taylor Swift quote that I can bring up here. there's a line in a Taylor Swift song that's when you're young, they assume you know nothing. And it's true. I mean, people do assume, well, you don't have the experience. You'll get it one day. I even find myself doing that about Gen Z now when they put stuff on TikTok that goes viral and they're attacking us. You know, I get critical of them, but it's just a different worldview. And so are we listening to each other's worldviews to be able to, as a community, find our place in the world? I think.
Well, I think important. There's something that comes to mind for me when you're just speaking about all that, mm-hmm. that a question that would kind of bust some of the hierarchical, whoever's the oldest has the most experience and you must be the smartest BS. Mm-hmm. Would be what, you know, we were talking earlier about who or in which generations in our company, you know, we were sorting our own company into all these generations. What does each generation have to mentor the rest of us about? Mm-hmm. So that mentor is not old to young. Mm-hmm. It's from a certain set of experiences to somebody who doesn't have the rich nature of that experience. So somebody who has been, what's the term that's being used now? Digital citizen.
Sure.
You know, the younger generations growing up as digital citizens. And, yeah. You know, I'm still, I go between being a digital voyeur and a digital visitor, but I'm definitely not the person who's a completely at home citizen in that world. And so there's so much that about how work gets done that could shape, are we in the office or not, that I could be mentored about from people who are at home in the digital environment and sharing with me what about that can produce extraordinary results. And as you say all the time, Robin, both power and joy, mm-hmm. you know, the power to make a difference and the joy of meaningful achievement, that what is there for us to mentor each other about?
MROs for me, by the way, that was such a like, moment, because as Mickey was saying, like he had, you know, a bias about being in the office. As you were talking, I realized, and I don't know if this is a generational or just my early work experience in large organizations. I do battle a little with the hierarchy, just of like having grown up in very hierarchical organizations. And the thing that you said around like, work hard, put your dues in, like, oh my God, that was like the mantra I grew up to. That was the what I heard in my head over and over again. Like, you know, you have to earn your way into those conversations. It's nothing's granted. And so I do have, I like, as you were saying that, I was like, no, that's, I do. I have a little bit of that. I have a little bit of like, yeah, prove it to me first. And as you're saying, I was like, oh, yeah, that's not good. Like, I actually need to look at that.
Well, it's like it kind of reminds me of like fraternity initiation, you know, when you went through the pain of it. So it's your turn to deal it out. You know, there's sort of this like earned power play in that. I don't think that's really.
I don't like that. I don't like that.
But I do. There's something psychological about that.
It's like, one of those moments like maybe we want to edit that part out.
No. I think there's like an earned right to exercise your power when you've been through that subservient kind of painful thing. And I'm not saying you're like a fraternity.
Well,
let me correct myself.
But that's interesting to say that there could be a thoughtless tendency.
Right.
That you could get pulled toward if we're not awake, if we're not aware about it. Yeah. You know, so he said one of the topics it might be great to be smart together about is what's the design of work and where people work and how do you make those choices? Mm-hmm. We could get organized and have that be one whole podcast. That's all that is, and bring some interesting stuff to it. Another that you remind me of, just the way you were just talking about that point of view about you're illegitimate until you
prove it to me.
Yeah.
Prove it to me.
That the other topic that's really, really hot is psychological safety. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, you know, having worked with so many CEOs around the world, I pay attention to what I hear over and over and over again. And the most common worry I get when we get close to somebody who's in a large organization and a big accountability like that, they worry about, are they being told the truth? Mm-hmm. So that they have that worry all over the place. And yet that thoughtless display of power, like you were just talking about, better than, more experienced than, people don't realize that is suppressing the truth. Mm-hmm. That is having people say, oh, I'm not legitimate yet. And if I speak up, there's the chance of humiliation and recrimination and all sorts of things that could damage my stature and my career. And that'd be interesting for us to talk about across generations. What do we each have to contribute to making us smarter about creating an environment where the truth mm-hmm. is natural, where people are free to be in an open discourse, and that's lauded, that's applauded, not punished?
Well, because I think the generations might have slightly different perspectives on the role of power dynamics, which I think is sort of what you're getting at, inside of organizations and how it impacts each of us and our role in each of those, right? And so that, I agree. I think there's something that would be fascinating to explore later.
Well, and, you know, another thing that just came to mind is, now, of course, there's been this huge explosion in paying attention to it because of the last year we've just lived through, but mental health. Mental health did not ever get talked about at work. It was never an organization's or a leader's responsibility to care for or be awake to their employees' mental health. Now you have to be. And what's funny is I actually am seeing that there's a connection between this whole, this is what's expected of you, follow the rules, put in the hours, and eventually you'll get X. In the millennial, at least this is my experience, and I've noticed it in other people, that I think is linked to rates of anxiety and overwhelm, we were given this freedom, especially privileged people. It's like, you can do whatever you want. Now you also have more of a voice because of social media. You can say what you want. You can be heard. And so all these options start opening up for people. And then you go, oh shit, I wish there was somebody who was telling me what to do. but I think that's another thing that's related to, it might be influencing at least how young people are showing up to work in this sort of search for direction, but also the pressure to get it right. The pressure to be happy too and satisfied with whatever you've been given, because you have had all this freedom and this choice and we do give you a voice, and why aren't you happy, damn it? You know?
Well, and my, again, if we talk about a generational perspective, and I know this is true for me, and Mickey, I'll be curious what you have to say, but that was absolutely a taboo topic. Like, you did not, nobody talked about it. We have some mental health challenges in my mother's family that, like, you don't talk about it. Nobody talks about it. You certainly, absolutely, under no circumstances discuss it at work. Ever, not ever. It's an interesting shift, I think, in how we view a leader's role in those conversations today that were, for me, absolutely off limits. And Mickey, I don't know you, I'm guessing you probably have something sort of in that same zip code-ish around what was viable at work.
You know, what gets triggered for me when you're saying that is that mental health was really about people being weak. Mm. You know, so somebody who had some sort of challenges with mental or emotional stability were weak. And so, yeah, you don't talk about that. You don't treat it like it's a legitimate illness, for God's sake. That's just a breakdown in somebody's moral fiber and character. And so that's, I grew up inside of that, which then of course led to, you don't talk about it. And unless you talk about it in disparaging terms about other people.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is another great example. So, you know, we're talking about the workplace as a topic to be smarter together about, psychological safety is a topic to be smarter together about. And what's the leader's role in assuring the mental and emotional health of people as a topic to take on? Mm-hmm. I think those are all great. And we could look at, well, who do we want to have from which generations that could be people with expertise, different perspectives, and take on topics like that. That's that's really exciting and can be sobering too. This last one about mental and emotional well-being.
Well, and I think it's worth mentioning too that you guys decided it was worth it to write a book about vitality in organizations, which is, I mean, we could extrapolate a little bit and say that's connected to well-being. Well-being on yeah. on the individual level, on the community social level.
Yeah.
I would imagine maybe that wasn't what business books were being written about when you guys were entering the arena. Again, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's something that we think there's ground to stand on that's tied to the bottom line, that well-being is not separated from your success as a business. And so all of the topics that you just mentioned are really about how do we care for well-being and the business at the same time, that paradox that I think is going to continue to be a big topic for organizations and leadership for a long time.
Well, I have two questions that might move us towards the end of this beginning. Mm-hmm. My first one is just in this casual going wherever it's going conversation, are each of you more or less interested in us doing this going forward as a function of this conversation? That's my first question.
More for sure.
Yeah. I think there's so much to learn from one another and that we don't actually group. But I also think organizations don't tend to do multi-generational groupings all that often. Not that I've noticed, not with intentionality to actually say, what do people with a different line of sight see in an organization? And I think that's actually the opportunity, is that we each have a different line of sight and different thing, a different aperture, so to speak, on what we're paying attention to. And I don't think this is a common grouping that we really pause and say, what is there to learn across the generations? Both on the, what is there to honor and let go of? What is there to honor and build off of? What is there to grow and expand, right? And so I think it's really across all of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think even just conversational norms, that might be something to explore at some point. Right. Even that's different.
Yeah.
We have this whole new syntax that's entirely nonverbal and involves memes and GIFs. We have an emoji syntax that we use for communication. But I mean, I think if we're talking about that the conversations are the work, how one generation might show up to a conversation is going to be different than how another generation would naturally show up to the conversation. And then blaming one or the other for doing it wrong is probably not going to get you anywhere. So I think that we're engaging in this intentionally in that kind of way and exploring those things, I think is pretty valuable. And I don't hear too many people talking about that or creating the space for that. We're like a little laboratory. We'll be everybody's experiment.
We're kind of a small petri dish.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, as all three of us know, we say the evidence of a quality conversation is learning. That we walk away with something we didn't walk in with. So I'm wondering, in this first undisciplined, disorganized foray into this topic, what, if anything, did each of us learn over this last 30 or so minutes?
Well, for me, really, and Emeros, thank you. Like this sort of this light bulb about like my own thoughts about hierarchy and how it influences my thinking. And do you have to earn your way into something? Like I'm going to be bothered by that for the rest of the week, I believe, at a minimum, around like, where does that permeate? Where do I sort of have an assumption that somebody's got to earn their stripes, so to speak, before I'm willing to listen to them more. So thank you for that. Like, I don't like it, but I think it's going to be really helpful for me. So thank you.
You're welcome. I think I'm still stuck on as generations, what sort of world events were going on around us that we subliminally took in as the way we could expect power to show up. and how that might have impacted our own behavior. Just listening to you talk through, I mean, all of us talk about, we're naming massive global impact moments. Of course, I'm an international affairs graduate, so I might be thinking about it from that perspective, but I do think it's important, you know, the what messages we were fed about leadership, what political beliefs we grew up with in a household that might have shaped our expectations of how leaders should operate, and how the world decided to interact while we were growing up, that we took as that's just how it is. I'm just thinking about that.
Well, two things have struck me pretty deeply. One of them is that we each, from a different generational perspective, have stories about the abuse of power. And I think that shaped us all in different ways. I mean, Woodstock was a reaction. Like, let's forget all this and just go out there and cut loose. But each of us have stories about that. And I think the responsible expression of the opportunity to make a difference in people's lives, when you started talking about mental and emotional health, that feels like it's running across us, and we would have different perspectives about how does the power to lead be an exercise of service rather than an exercise of abuse. So it just keeps hitting me that we're going to have different things about that. And the other one is what you triggered about mentoring is not hierarchical. You know, that anybody from a different set of experiences and backgrounds could mentor others. And that's pretty exciting to me. What is it in our own company that people could mentor one another about and break the grip of that means old to young? No, it means different to different. So those two things really struck me today. So Robin, you want to tie a ribbon around this conversation?
Well, I think the ribbon to tie is, you know, difference plus trust equals brilliance. And the key to that is the trust, right? So I love being in this conversation with the two of you, who I think we have just a unique bond of trust from a shared set of values and a vision that compels all of us and a set of principles that we believe in our bones. And I'm delighted to be in the exploration of what does that look like across the field of generations. So thank you, Emma Rose, for hosting us today.
Absolutely. Looking forward to more. Thanks for being up for it.
Okay. Well, we hope that somebody who listened to this thought it was worth listening to. And we'll check in with us again another time where we try to be smarter together than we are separately.
Sounds like a plan.
This episode was produced by Guy Connolly. Original artwork is by Dana Buckingham, and music is by a cast of characters. Special thanks to Conversant's extended community, who inspire the continued evolution of our work and stand with us in our commitment to change leadership, business, and the world through conversation. You can learn more about Conversant at www.conversant.com.
On Connection is created and produced by the members of Conversant. Awakening the world to the power and joy of authentic human connection, we set a new standard for leadership that produces meaningful, enduring impact.
Until next time.